your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Tuesday, January 13th. It's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. And once again, I shall be your host for today. Today, it is Tuesday, so we have our... I wonder if it's too early to call you a co-host. But we kept continuing our series of The Making of the Bahamas. And we using Mr. Donato Misick, who has lived as an expat abroad and has returned home to do business and is doing pretty well here in his homeland. And I have been interrogating him for the past few weeks about what he has seen abroad versus what he has seen here. And we are making an account, making a case of what we need to do as Bahamians to catch up, to play good ball versus to what is happening abroad. Today in our Making of the Bahamas series, we're going to be talking about immigration, right? Just recently, we saw in the news that there were 10 houses, 10 unregulated houses were demolished on Russell Island. Russell Island technically is Spanish Wells. It's Spanish Wells or Sigillion, I forget the right name for it. Spanish Wells, which is the capital of that island. And I can get the right name for the island itself soon. I'm sure someone is going to text me and tell me the correct name. But Spanish Wells and Russell Island are twin islands next to each other off Eleuthera. They had a migrant swell recently, particularly on Russell Island, where there were a number of unregulated houses that proliferated there. The residents of Spanish Wells complained. The government has responded. Have they been doing a response for a while? Recently, up to yesterday, they bulldozed 10 more. It scores more there. So they're trying to regulate it. My guest, Mr. Misick, lived on Caicos Island. They have a similar issue in Turks and Caicos Island. For full disclosure, Mr. Misick, I can tell by his surname, has roots and ties to Turks and Caicos. His father's a Turks and Caicos German, so he has, I'm not sure if he's a belonger, but he can explain that. If he has belonger status or he considered as driftwood living in Turks and Caicos. But in Turks and Caicos, they too have shanty towns, unregulated properties and housing. And in fact, I would dare say their unregulated housing is twice the size in terms of development, in terms of structure, in terms of setting themselves in, establishing themselves into the system. Their immigration problem is different from the Bahamas' immigration problem. I would say that their immigration problem is dire. And I say that again. Their immigration problem, maybe in the Turks and Caicos, dire there, in contrast to the Bahamas immigration problem. And I'm going to have Mr. Misick, since he lived there, since he's seen these things, tell a narrative. So the listening audience who haven't been to Turks and Caicos, who's not familiar with Turks and Caicos, can appreciate it and have a compare and contrast as to what it is that we may be dealing with in the future, or what we are doing well here, or what we are doing poorly here and that we need to address now before we go down a slippery slope. So without further introduction, I introduce you to Donato Misick, who is a Bahamian who has returned home. And most recently has lived in the Turks and Caicos Island. And like I said, we're going to do a compare and contrast to the immigration problem that's happening in the Turks and Caicos to the immigration problem happening in the Bahamas, and having juxtaposed the issue or the bulldozing that is happening throughout the Bahamas, but most recently in Spanish Well, Russell Island in particular. Mr. Misick.
Good morning, Bahamas. Good morning, Sisu. Thank you again. almost at co-host status, almost there. Yes, immigration. When I came home about 4 or 5 months now, you know, I would always come home 3-4 times a year, you know, would always hear the cry of Bahamians of how bad it is, how bad it is. And I would, you know, you don't want to have a conversation where you're trying to one-up the person and say, well, you know, it's certainly different and it's a lot more extreme. And you see the consequences of what happens when you let an unregulated situation turn into, as we just come off majority rule day, you end up with a majority immigrant population that doesn't speak your language, that just has a different culture and different issues that you did not expect was going to happen this fast.
I'm going to stop you there because you used the word majority, and I'm not sure if that's a proper tense. In this conversation, the largest immigrant population would be those of Haitian descent.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I would go far, this is my estimation, I would go as far as maybe a third of our population, mm-hmm. right, out of the 400,000, are either of Haitian extract or Haitian descendant, mm-hmm. right? Great grandparents, whatever it is, I would say maybe a third, okay. right? 33%. I may even drop down to 25%, but there are a significant amount of them here. You use the word majority initially in your conversation about Turks and Caicos. What would be your estimation in terms of the population of this particular immigrant group in Turks and Caicos?
So numbers, you would probably look at the register of the Bahamas, Turks and Caicos would probably be about 8,000 residents on the register. The actual population estimates of Turks and Caicos is 47,000. These are registered people. This is not the undocumented. So if you try to, crunch those numbers, 8,000 on the register, which would be probably 90% belongers or indigenous Turks and Caicos Islanders, and you subtract that from the 47,000, and it'll kind of give you the kind of numbers of what you could probably think. Their data estimates was 60% of the population, if I remember correctly, was of Haitian descent.
60%?
60%.
I'm not sure if you understand what 60%, that's more than half.
Yeah.
Or is of Haitian descent, you think, in Turks and Caicos. They are the majority.
They are.
In contrast to Bahamas, where, like I said, 25 to 30%, they may.
And I say this with no trepidation, you know, maybe my numbers or my statistics might be off, but there's no one that can say without a shadow of doubt they are the majority population in the Turks and Caicos Islands.
My next question is, in the Bahamas, we have different classes of, again, we're dealing with the Haitian population because they make the majority. We're not targeting Haitian, we're just trying to do a compare and contrast, right? Because in the Turks and Caicos, you have British citizens there too.
Yes.
Right? A large number of British citizens there, right? And of course, in the Bahamas, we have expats here or Caribbean immigrants here too, right? But again, we're dealing with the immigration problem of the Bahamas. So we're using this particular demographics just for this analysis, right? The Haitians or residents here in the Bahamas, they have different social status. They have Haitians who are middle class. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure they have rich Haitians here who are doing well. They're professionals, doctors, lawyers, yes. Nurses, right? Teachers, right? So they are infused into the Bahamas. They have productivity into the Bahamas. And then there are a population who are poor, the challenge, indigent. And many of them live inside shanty towns.
Yes.
Right? And you see that our government has responded to shanty towns, right? And said we can't have unregulated housing here, and list all the detriments of having that. In Turks and Caicos, using that social stratosphere of how are the Haitian migrants in Turks and Caicos?
So what has happened over the last, I would say, about 12 years, there is starting to become a burgeoning middle class, and I would say almost wealthy, set of Turks and Haitian descent Turks and Caicos Islanders.
And explain what you mean by wealthy.
They are building complexes that would rival anything that you would see in the Bahamas. I'm talking about 10, 15 units, Haitian Turks and Caicos Islanders that are opening restaurants and doing well.
Is this first generation Haitians, or these are Haitians who migrated there? The two different type.
Both. Some, I would say the majority of ones who migrated there, and I would have to make speculations of how they made that.
No, we ain't talking about the money yet. We're just talking about who is doing this development, because you're saying that there's an increase in middle class.
Yeah.
Right? Now, if you go to, like, off Andrus Avenue, what is that? Where?
The Grove.
Yeah. You see that a number of the buildings there, the number of the shops that there are of Haitian descent. Yes. Right? Of Chinese also, but the Haitians, migrants who have become Bahamians, legalizing themselves, giving back through their shops, and they very entrepreneurial in general. And you were saying that there seems to be a increasing middle class of Haitian and Haitian Turks Islanders of that mix growing.
I wouldn't even say it. The increase has been dramatic. There are whole areas where it is just, you know, commercial building after apartment complex after apartment complex. And it literally felt like it happened overnight.
New buildings?
New buildings.
So we don't have that here in the Bahamas. It don't necessarily be new buildings. They're replacing old buildings or moving into old buildings and making that commercial areas.
These are very nice, very large. You know, they're going up three stories. You know, in ways that'll shock you. Like, this is dramatic amounts of growth. You know, whole areas of Turks and Caicos. Turks and Caicos were in Providenciales. Let me be specific. In Providenciales, that this amount of growth has happened. And it's amazing to see. You get to see the pride of what they have accomplished, and you marvel at it, and you're like, okay, this they're jamming.
And this is like one generation. This is like second and third generation.
One generation.
And you mentioned, let me repeat this, or inquire to make sure, you're saying about six, from your estimation, about 60% of the population in Turks and Caicos is of Haitian descent.
Yes. And I will challenge anyone to call in and correct me, you know, but I know for sure it's a mass majority of the population. It's not even close.
And you're saying there's an economic boom amongst that community also. Yeah.
There's an economic boom in Turks and Caicos Islands on the whole, but for that part, boom. And not to say there was low expectations, and so I'm looking at it from that perspective. I'm saying on any expectations, it's been a dramatic boom.
In terms of paying taxes, are they regularized? Because some people in Bahamas will say the immigrants that are here are under the radar or not regularized to pay taxes. They don't pay VAT, whatever it is. They have small businesses where they take out but not necessarily pay back in.
So if they do have jobs, you know, legitimate jobs within the system, they're paying taxes. I would, from my estimates, just from my anecdotal looking at the situation, I would say the majority of them are probably not working in a regularized working fashion. So they're probably not paying taxes.
Even though they're made up of about 60%, you're saying, you, in your estimation, the majority of those 60% is not regularized? They will call, in my word, illegal migrants staying in Turks and Caicos?
So, to parse the numbers, once they come in through the system and they get a work permit, it's not...
Hey, work permit, I can understand. That's regularized.
So, once they get in that system and get a work permit, I come in and I work for Cecil this first year. Next year, I'm working for John Smith.
Can't do that.
But my work permit is still under Cecil Nuri. There's no guarantee John Smith is paying my NIB, or they have a form of NHIP, which is a single-payer healthcare system. There's no guarantee that's being done.
Is there a shanty town in Turks and Caicos? I didn't ask that question directly.
Several. The shanty towns have names. They have informal names within the community. You know, being working in, I was in the military also in Turks and Caicos. I rose to the rank, you know, miniature rank of Lance Corporal. And you be immersed in the culture and to understand the culture, you get to learn certain things. So you learn the shanty towns have names. So when they get in a taxi or a jitney, what they call them, you would direct your jitney to Yad Palette, you know, or Yad No Pay, or it's called Yad Paye, No Paye. There's another one called Dockyard. You know, Dockyard is the largest of the shanty towns. And you direct them to these neighborhoods because there's one called Missick Yard. I learned that recently before.
You all have your own shanty town?
Yeah, that's what they call it.
Okay.
I was quite embarrassed, but that's what they call it. But there's several of them. There's several of them. I know about seven. I've heard numbers higher, but I've seen seven of them.
These shanty town, I see you call them, coming to you right now. Is the shanty town, do the residents of Turks and Caicos, able to walk through, traverse through the shanty town?
I think one time ago, they were able to traverse, or they would have felt okay.
Comfortable
with traversing those shanty towns. In the last 4 years, some of those shanty towns, I wouldn't say some, most of them have become extremely violent. Not little violent. I'm talking about violence on another level. So where Bahamians would have seen the last couple of years, I think a few years ago, the Royal Bahamas Police Force had to send help the Turks and Caicos Islands. I think Jamaica currently has a team there to help the Turks and Caicos Islands. Those shanty towns, and a couple of which that I've been in, you know, that I would have gone in maybe 8 years ago, today I would never, ever, ever go up there. Your safety is at risk.
We got to explain that more and explore that more because you're stressing the word your safety is at risk. Yeah. And I said, this shouldn't be no place where the police force, the military can't go. And now you're saying that there's places that your safety, even if you're a military, is at risk.
Oh, yeah, big time.
And I want to know if we have something like that to be concerned of here. But let's go to the callers there and so they can join the conversation. Go ahead, caller. Guide and Radio AM. We're talking to Donato Missick, who lived as an expat, but then converted converts there while in Turks and Caicos. Go ahead, caller.
A pleasant morning, CA, and good morning, Mr. Missick.
Good morning.
Mr. Missick, are you any relative to Charles Missick?
You know, all Missicks claim that we are related. I can't say right offhand that I know Charles Missick right now. It might come to me as we converse.
But, Charles is Mike's brother, Mike Missick, the former premier.
But yeah.
He and I graduated together from Turks and Caicos High.
Yes, I do know.
I can attest to what you're saying because I was in trouble about in 2024. And my niece was Keisha Wilson. I don't know if you know her.
Yes, I do.
She was driving me around. She said, Uncle, look here. You see that big building? She drive down there. See that shopping center? Haitian. Took me down, further down there. Uncle, all them is Haitians. So I can attest to what you say. Like, you know, and, you know, most of the Turks Islanders, they're out of the TCI, a lot of them are the UK, the US, or some of the Bahamas and whatnot. And the Haitians really are just, they are taking over, buddy. There's even one in the parliament, you know. There's a Haitian, of Haitian descent who's been elected as the representative. I don't know if he won a seat in the last election, but he was there in 2024. But, it's a situation, and I don't know if it's going to change, because just like the Bahamas, TCI people, they have no bunch of children like today, and so on and so forth. And the school is just, it's populated, and most Turks Island people like Bahamians. I was speaking to a former classmate of mine when somebody mentioned about the jobs. They say Turks Island people, they were working the hard sun. They were all the jobs. So they have this mentality that these menial works, they, you know, they for the immigrants and so forth. I'll sit back and listen as the conversation moves.
Trick, I'll let Mr. Missick respond.
You know, I think there's a misconception, you know. You can't compare what's happening in the Turks and Caicos to the Bahamas at all.
Why is that?
They're not even close. They're not even close. I'll give you an example. You know, something what the caller said about, you know, they don't want the jobs. in the hot sun. And I push back on that a bit. You know, I'm in the construction industry, and there are loads of Bahamian men working in the hot sun. What has happened is our construction industry in 2026 is at an extreme boom right now.
It's busy in the Bahamas.
It is extremely busy.
We have a shortage of labor.
We have a serious, I think serious might be in too extreme of a word, but there's a shortage of labor. And so what tends to be the narrative is you can get a contractor to come to your house for that $1,000 job right now. Mm. If he's a decent contractor, he can up to your home to pitch that little shed that you got in the backyard. Because he's somewhere on this island or somewhere within this country working and doing extremely well. And so the labor force has to be brought in from elsewhere to fill the gaps. But what we don't need is a labor force that can't communicate in English and doesn't have basic education. We do need a labor force to help build our country that at least has those basic necessities to come and work.
We're making space for immigrants because there is a boom. And I hear you say we need skilled labor, but we just need labor in general. But let's go to the call and I can have you respond to that again. Go ahead, caller. Guide and Radio AM. We're talking to Donato Misik, who has returned home from Turks and Caicos, and we've given his narrative of what he noticed there regarding migrants. Go ahead, Colin.
Good morning, I'm seeing. Good morning, Mr. Mitchell.
Good morning, good morning.
Okay, for a minute I thought you were describing the Bahamas, but in respect to the migration in Turks and Caicos, what is the average, would you know the average period that these people would be on work permits? I know we have some who are on work permits like 30 years and in the Bahamas. Is that the same thing? And do you see them being regularized to the point where they are now participating in your local elections? Those type of things. I'm just trying to understand something right here before you answer.
So again, almost the exact same situation with the last caller where it's just different. And here's why it's different. There's a bung on the cake in the Turks and Caicos Islands that's different from in the Bahamas. Well, when you get, I think after your 10th work permit, which the government of TCI is proposing to change right now, they're going to increase that, I think, to 20. Somebody could correct me online if I'm wrong about that. But it used to be 10 work permits. Once you've got the 10th work permit, you can get a PRC. Once you get your PRC, now you can be, nationalized.
You become a citizen?
You could become a citizen. No. You don't get a belongership. But now you have the pathway to having a British Overseas Territory passport, which then enables you to have a British passport, which you can get both of those within the same year. So after 10 work permits, you get a PRC.
It's a permanent resident.
Which gets permanent resident. Which now you can get naturalized, mm-hmm. And naturalization gives you the pathway to the passport. Once you get that British passport, you are a British citizen. So the big piece of the pie where you can live in the Bahamas and have 30 work permits, whereas you live in Turks and Caicos and you have 10 work permits, now you're on the pathway to having a British passport.
And with a British passport, you go live in the UK.
Well, with a British passport, you know, contrary to what a lot of people don't really know, the UK is kind of a socialist state. They have already figured out the system up there where you get loads of free stuff. You get money for just being. Just being. You don't have a job, they're going to figure it out for you. You want to go to college, they're going to figure it out for you. And so the game is once the free stuff, which was meant for their citizens, which now, you know, they can access, people want that. So it's more incentive. It's almost more incentive to be down there working than it is to come here.
Call you still there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Good morning. How are you gentlemen doing?
We do.
Good
morning.
Give me a second here because, you know, this is a very touching topic you're on today, and I hope you continue with this topic, you know, coming into this election season, because something has to be done with immigration in the Bahamas. Now, I am not one of those people that think the Bahamas can handle what we have on our own with just Bahamians. We can't. You know, the Haitian worker is just as important as a Bahamian worker, but there's a right way of doing things. The reason I say that is I will tell you personally, I'm in different businesses, personally. And, you know, I had a gentleman that was under work permit working for me. And I started seeing how these guys manipulate the system. And I don't know if it works like that in Turks and Caicos. But when I tell you this system is broken, this system is broken. This gentleman that worked for me, he told me he had his daughter coming to Abaco. I said, your daughter? How is your daughter coming here? I have she has a friend bringing her from Haiti. And I said, okay, well, she's coming to visit. That's nice. Yeah, she's coming to visit. I'm enrolling her in school. So this child came to Nassau. This is a six-year-old because this gentleman's girlfriend or the baby's mother doesn't want the child anymore. So you need to raise the child. This child was able to come to the Bahamas and get some sort of visitor visa to come see her father that has a work permit. This child is enrolled in Abaco. This is from last school year now, last August. So I'm assuming this child is enrolled in school, can't speak no English, can't this and that. And the child is still here to this day. I fired the gentleman. I said, you know, I cannot deal with that type of stuff. But again, how did that happen? How did that happen? One, right? Two, you have to think about how important and how strong this, I wouldn't even say strong, how connected the Haitian community is in the Bahamas. Under the last administration, the FNM administration, we were working in Abaco, and they had an area in Abaco that was a shanty town. It was called Alboki Village, or Alboki Club. And they had about 100 undocumented workers in there, 100. Everybody called. I mean, they had a minister from the FNM that came, walked the ground, walked the whole area, said he would do something about it. Never did anything about it. Nothing. The people were pouring out, begging them to do something. The PLP won the election. 3 weeks later, they sent the brigade in there and cleared the entire place out. Where does the will come from sometimes to deal with this illegal immigration thing? And then it happens one day, and then it stops. It happens one day, and it stops. We have to find the happy medium when it comes to dealing with immigration in the Bahamas, because it is out of hand. The whole fix here is finding out who is signing for permits for all of these people. I know a gentleman that is a Haitian Bahamian. He has 30 workers under him, 30 workers. And this is a gentleman that doesn't have a company. How is that possible?
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. I know you have a business in Abaco. You have a business, several businesses in Nassau. But how is the immigrant population in Abaco when people say everybody in Abaco have Haitian family? Even the white, they say even the white population there are Haitian.
Let me give you an example. I have a couple friends of mine that they're taxi drivers, right? And they have that industry locked down. It's not like Nassau. When you knock off at night, you can let a Haitian gentleman drive your taxi all around Nassau. No big deal. In Abaco, they've kept that for Bahamians only. And, you know, they've had Haitians that tried to get into the taxi union, but they've shut that down because that's their livelihood and there's only so many of them. But when you look at any other part of Abaco, I talk about boating to crawfishing. You know, I was working one time, a fella comes up to me, a Haitian gentleman in a little boat, no registration on it, nothing, selling crawfish out of season. You know, and I'm Bahamian, and I looked at the guy, I said, what are you doing? But the problem is there's no regulation. There's absolutely no regulation. Abaco is, again, back to the same old thing. They don't have the pigeon pea in these places now, but they've started their own little villages everywhere. And all it is one big racket where people are making money. You have certain Haitians that are coming in, and they will hire or bring you in and say, okay, well, I'm going to put you to work so you can pay for the work permit. Then they have somebody that they pay off, or I'm not going to say that, but they figure out how they work, and they put them in the cycle. And again, all the time. And then you have somebody like me. I have a bunch of Bahamians working for me. I have a handful of foreigners that work for me. And when you go to get your work permit for me, like if I go to get a work permit, it takes me forever to get it done. And then I have these guys that'll pop up and try to get work. And I'm saying, no, do you have a work permit? No, I don't have a work permit. And then within 30 days, the guys pull up there and they have a work permit. I had a gentleman the other day said, listen, I was looking for a driver, for example. This gentleman just got his work permit now, just got a work permit. I said, no, we can't hire you. You need to have a Bahamian driver's license. They told me the whole story about buying a Bahamian driver's license. That you could go $500. There's a gentleman that runs a driving company here who's a Haitian Bahamian. You pay him $500 and he can get you a driver's license. So you have this level of corruption across all of these different industries, and all it's doing is it's negatively impacting our country in a way that we're not going to be able to come back from it. You know, and then you start talking about violence and things like that. You go into certain areas in Nassau now. Try to go into Nassau Village and take care of a certain area, or you'll have a riot, you know. And there's nothing. And again, like I said, I'm not xenophobic when it comes to Haitians. Anybody working here, if they're here to work for the betterment of our country, fantastic. But there's a right way to do things and a wrong way to do things. And some of the stuff with people coming in here is absolutely crazy. I would say one more thing before I go. Please, I ask both of you guys to do this. Go on BahamasAir.com today, okay? I would like you to go on BahamasAir.com and try and book a flight to Haiti between now and February. You can book a flight to Haiti. I check this all the time. You can book a flight to Haiti to go out, no problem. Try to find a flight to bring to come back into Nassau from Cape Haitian to Nassau. You cannot find one flight from Cape Haitian to Nassau. They are sold out till middle of February. So how are all of these Haitians coming into the Bahamas? On the flights are absolutely full. The Bahamas, their best flight is the flight to Haiti. That's the best flight. That thing is sold out constantly. We have to ask ourselves, what is going on in our little country?
Okay. I appreciate you. That's a businessman in Abaco and Nassau. He always expresses himself in terms of the plight and the concern. In Turks and Caicos, I heard one place which said that the labor there is unionized. I said the immigrant labor, and you're pretty unionized in quotes now because it's a colloquial term, that it's like one person who controls the labor and that the government have to go and speak to them in order to get labor, especially in construction.
No. It's a free fall. I myself, at some points in time dealing with construction, ended up hiring people that had fraudulent documents or told me they, you know, had a work permit. Found out when my military buddies passed by on the job site and they took off running, they did not have the proper status. There's no one person to go to and talk. It's almost like in the United States where, you know, you would see the day laborers on the side of the road ready to at the Home Depot.
I've seen that on Cowpen Road now. They just stand up there and then the truck comes and collects a certain amount of people.
Because they're... What I would want the Bahamian public to try and understand is that we've been extremely fortunate. We can understand that level of desperation. I've been to Haiti before. I've seen it. You know, I went to Haiti before the earthquake. You know, several times when boats would come in, boats that have been apprehended, I've helped take the migrants off the boats. You know, they've been kids. Which is one of the most, you know, usually when we're taking migrants off the boat, we were all masked up in all of our military gear. So, you know, they can't see our faces. And it would be some of the most, it was extremely hurtful to see some of these kids. Everybody was shaking, trembling because we're all in masks and military gear with weapons. So I know we look scary, you know, and everybody's trembling, shaking from the fear. And to see the conditions with they would leave their homes to try and get to greener pasture. And you can just try and picture the kind of stories that they're hearing. They can go to this place and there's US dollars and you can get a British passport and they got up-to-date facilities and they got restaurants. So just the things that are being said that people get on these boats. So when we sit back and how is this happening? The desperation is the mother of this ingenuity one of my best workers at that point in time, he was one under my butler team, you know, he had status, and he told me he just jumped on the boat, he didn't pay, and they was going to throw him overboard because he didn't pay, and he begged and pleaded with them, and they kept him on, and he just got, he said he knew once he got here, he was going to make it. That guy has work permit status. I don't know how he got that particular status, but he's made it happen. They will make it happen once they get here.
Once they get here.
And it's not like we do need the labor, but I stress this over and over. We don't need labor that doesn't have formal education. We don't need labor that can't speak English. You know, we would preferably, if we're building a nation, would pick labor that has some cultural connection in terms of a former British colony, in terms of they had infrastructure from where they came from. You know, what is that? When migrants are coming from Port-au-Prince, in Latoti, there's little to no infrastructure. So when they're working in the construction industry, there's no Ministry of Planning in Latoti. You know, so what that means is the necessary building codes to build a house does not exist there. And so when you're thinking, hey, these guys want to work, bring them to the Bahamas to work, to do what? They're not up to code for plumbing or electrical. It does not exist there. There's zero infrastructure in these places. And the understanding of what that means when you get them to this country, it means that they'll do anything, anything to get themselves regularized and breaking the law. There is no law in these places.
We can take a quick commercial break. Carl, I see you. When we come back on the other side, Carl, if you can hold on, we come directly to you, straight to you, so you can give to add to the conversation. We'll be right back.
Into the neighborhood,
we now large and in charge, so we need to check out what's going on in everybody yard. What about that gun that we know that Junior and his homeboys just ran out? Can we report that too?
Of course we can,
but we could be in deep trouble if they find out.
We need to report what we see, Beulah. When you call Crime Stoppers, they just answer your call in Miami.
So then we can report everything: guns, where they hiding the drugs, who shoot who part of which gang, or who disturbing the peace with the loud music and the motorcycles.
Then our neighborhood will be the best in the Bahamas, and everybody gonna want to come live here, and then our house price will go up, gal.
So what we waiting on? What's the number?
If you see something, say something. Let us all pitch in and stop the crime before it's your time. Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands, or text us through the Crack Crime Bahamas app. Stop the crime before it's your time.
Just sign in and have a seat, please. They'll call you in for your x-ray shortly.
That's why they call it a waiting room. You won't have that problem at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Grosvenor. We never schedule multiple appointments, so you'll be in and out in no time. And if your initial screening reveals a concern, our radiologist can conduct an alternative screening right then and there. Call 328-8157 to schedule an appointment at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Grosvenor today.
Love the show? Want to give yourself 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. I'm going straight to the caller. I know we have a number of Caribbean nationals in the Bahamas who immigrate here to the Bahamas too. I know that we have a number of Jamaicans who immigrate here all the time, but a number of them come in with construction skills, cabinet making skills, woodwork skills, right? But they're able to assimilate. You mentioned that in Haiti, they don't have any ministry of works, yeah, or who do standardization of certain things, right? So when they come here, they start from scratch, right? They're not coming with the necessary skills that we may need, or we would be able to accept and say, come join us and help develop in the Bahamas. But let's go to this caller first, and I'll continue that conversation next. Go ahead, caller. Guiding Radio AM.
Yes, good morning to your guest, the Abakunian.
Good
morning to your guest, and good morning, Mr. Nuri. I'd like to thank the Abakunian for fitting us in on what's going on over there and highlighting the chronology of inactions by all governments. I don't want to really say, but this government came in and do this and do that. They're not doing enough. So the problem is numerology, like we've been saying all along. It's a part of the problem, too, with this missing the fares of the immune people. And keep letting everybody call in the talks and talk about xenophobia. But my problem is a wider geopolitical solution in which, why is it that all of our Caribbean countries and Europe at large and the world at large is sitting back and allowing Haiti to be in this state for decades, but nobody willing to really help and go in? And we see Trump with his geopolitical maneuvers, et cetera, and hegemonious type actions, whatever, right? Just an imposition, just doing what he's doing in the Caribbean, but nobody's paying attention to Haiti. A compilation scenario in which they are deporting the Haitian migrants from Florida, et cetera, and wherever. This creates another compounding factor, and nobody's talking about it, given the numbers at hand. So when we look at it, the question is for everybody, why is it that they can't fix Haiti? They know the fallout, the repercussions, because of the number of people that lives in Haiti for all of the neighboring islands. You know, whether it be the Dominican Republic, which is just to the east of them, and then we see where their influence is, and they seem to be preying on small island states, the Haitian population, and people that they can overwhelm or where they already have influence, they have cell phone contacts, they could always lure them in, like the gentleman is saying. The question is not, because it's like we saying we don't deserve our country, and dear Fred Mitchell and all other people talk about sovereignty. It sickens me because I'm a Bahamian and I deserve a sovereign rights to have a peace of mind in my country. I don't deserve to have people telling me it's more than them. I don't deserve certain negative belligerence. I don't deserve a parallel society that creates a parallel economy. And another thing, what's sickening for me is when we come to realize that an abundance of unskilled labor is beneficial to the elites or the oligarchical structure, because an abundance of cheap labor really means which you can don't pay them this, you can don't pay them that, you don't have to pay national insurance, with the disparity in the languages, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, the thing is, where is the buck stop? Who's responsible for this? You trying to tell me the politicians at large, you trying to tell me the Bahamian people responsible for this? I mean, we read the government could pass a number of ordinances. It's like the country's being allowed to run away with itself, and then politicians are running a counter-narrative to what they're doing and what they're saying. The problem lies at immigration. The question I pose to your guest is, it was a rhetorical question, but he's saying that he don't, like, somebody, he said the gentleman came in and he got this and he got that. The question is not how they're getting it. We know they're getting it. We have to read between the headlines. We don't need no money. I know you can't say, we know how they're getting it. It's money. And it's bribery and it's corruption. It's simple. We don't need to be blessed up, you know what I mean?
Thank you very much. I'll let you respond to that. One of the things I on visiting Haiti, I recognize Haiti was far more sophisticated than what I ever dreamed about. And again, maybe my expectations was low, but this was before the earthquake. Haiti was far more sophisticated that I had never known. You know, Port-au-Prince was an international city. And when I say international, there were people there from all over the world. You know, Colombians, there were Chinese, when I flew in, you saw that on the plane. There's a class of Haitians that also exploits Haitians.
To exploit each other.
And that carries over to every segment of their society. And so you see it here, but they're also where they would take advantage of one another. And when it spilled over and their papers were not correct and, you know, they're begging you not to take them because they trusted somebody else in their community to do something and it just wasn't done. You saw it on every level that everybody was just hustling. And maybe it was the empathy in me trying to understand where it comes from, the desperation of the position that they're in.
Let me ask you a question. Is there a Haitian crisis in Turks and Caicos?
Expound a bit more on that one.
Definitely in the Bahamas, they said there's not a immigration crisis here. Mm-hmm. You're saying that the number of persons here are documented. They're here to work. We need the labor. But there's a pushback saying, man, no, it's too many. It's just too many. And it seems as if something underhandedly is happening. I'm asking if the system is broken and that corruption has infiltrated Turks and Caicos and that the people who we've seen working or existing in Turks and Caicos are there because of corruption or there because of ill-begotten ways?
The answer to that, you know, would be yes. I would say the present government in Turks and Caicos is trying their best with the resources that they have. You know, Turks and Caicos is a little funny, touchy situation where it's still a British territory. And their constitution and how much power the elected official has is kind of tampered by the actual crown itself.
Mm-hmm.
So they can want to do certain things, but still has to ask for approval. So their hands are kind of tied. And so if you pay attention to what's happening in Europe, what's happening in the UK, where the citizenry is all crying about is too much immigration. And what the caller just said about the geopolitical ramifications, I think there was a bit of geopolitical gamesmanship what was going on with migrants. And it seemed to be, they were just a little bit too lax on nobody wanted to stem the tide. You know, boats were coming in with impunity. Boats were coming up on shores in tourist areas.
Let me see if I can squeeze some of these callers in. We have 30 seconds for each one. Go ahead, caller. Guide and Mary AM, we're giving you everyone 30 seconds as we about to transition. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, CEO. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Mr. Messick.
All right. Good afternoon.
Let me just say that very quickly here, the sentiments that my good friend 52 expressed very much shared a whole lot of us, but it's something that you said as well, Mr. Messick, that really brought everything, tied everything together. And that thing basically was, you know, when you are well traveled, or you have traveled to some of these places, you get to understand what's happening on the ground. Many of us who have traveled, I've traveled to Haiti once, I've been over the Dominican Republic once, and this was just before the last hurricane that some years ago that came through that impacted that area. But I'm going to say this much. We have this misconception about Haiti being a very poor country. Haiti is not poor. Not poor at all. Yeah, you have areas that appear to be poor because they're not pouring into it. And as you so rightfully said, Port-au-Prince was an international place where you found persons from all around the world had a segment in that area there. But Haiti has more millionaires in this Western Hemisphere than most of the other Caribbean countries, hands down. But yet we still refer to them as a poor country. Haiti is not poor. The selection of persons that's coming here for right. cheap labor, that is a very vexing problem. Even in our construction field, I'll give you a personal experience I had. I actually had a Bahamian that brought a few of the nationality. And I actually had to have a Bahamian come by and check my walls on the construction side. And my walls were off. I had to pay the extra money to get my walls printed. But what I'm saying here is, and I'm just kind of trying to lay it out quickly, we have to be very careful about the labor component to make sure that these persons coming into this country can do the jobs that they are qualified to do. And there's no check and balances in it. So we have a Bahamas to fix. And I'm going to tell you, we cannot continue along this pathway because right now, as it stands, my closing remarks, there is now an area where it seems our police officers cannot go into that area. It's more like they got to get an invitation to come because they can't go. And this part, I'm going to call it out. Right down Carmichael Road, there's a part there called Montgomery Street. They can't go in the back there.
Wow.
They have to get permission to go in the back there.
I've heard this before.
Okay.
We have to fix this problem. We are only recreating that which they left behind.
Jeff.
And right here in the Bahamas, we as Bahamians, we are fearful in our own country because our people who we elected to govern and serve and protect us, they're not doing what they're supposed to do.
Thank you very much,
Jeff.
That's
all I wanted to say. Thank you for taking my call.
Let me see if I can squeeze this last call in. Go ahead, caller. Guiding Radio AM. You're live, caller. I'm squeezing you in. Call again once. Call again twice. I'm going to play this quick voice note here.
We collect about $150 million U.S. every year from work permit fees. And those are people who come here and they work and they provide a skill and they build the country. And there's a lot of prejudice, unfortunately, which exists for a certain nationality. God only knows why. because these people have helped.
Okay, let's stop right there. Well, sorry that it's not having some issues with it. But that's the Minister of Foreign Affairs who was saying that it's going to impact our election and how we treat, how we respond to our immigration crisis, how we interact in terms of the narrative. So saying our narrative is kind of violent.
To attack these people ought to be really careful because they will almost certainly lose the general election by doing so. Such is the case. So
I found that interesting that we did talk about a population and that it's now saying that it will impact our general election. That I found fascinating. I'm not sure how Bahamians are interpreting that. Should we push back or interrogate on what you mean by that? Mm-hmm. But as in closing, as you go, in contrast to Turks and Caicos and the Bahamas, that is, what should we be doing? Or is there a fear for the Bahamas should be concerned about our immigration problem?
I kept pointing out the differences. And one of the differences is the Bahamas, we're extremely prideful. And I know a lot of Bahamians might say, we don't have no culture, or Bahamians don't care. When you live outside of this country, I will repeat this over and over, when you live outside of the country, you see Bahamians with a lot more pride and a lot more gusto and fervent. You know, and our immigration policy has to be crafted. It can't just be organic. And it just seems that we're just throwing the seeds in the ground and wherever it grow, the vine grow. That's not a path. That's not good stewardship of the ship. You know, and that's what we have to be of our nation and our pride. And, I've pointed out before, we're the sexy girl in the Caribbean. And once we look at ourselves at that and have a high self-esteem about where we'll be organic, we can't allow it to be organic season.
Yes, our immigration needs to be planned. We need a particular type of immigrant to be immigrating here. We need to have the status quo saying, if you come in here, you need to be able to be educated, speak the language.
Yeah.
You need to be able to work and have the skill and trade. And that's a prerequisite. Other than that, we send you back. This has been Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Thank you very much, Donato Misick. Yeah. I'll see you next week.
Next week.
Have a wonderful day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on GuardianTalkRadio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.